Sunday for Easter services. We're grateful for all those that are joining us online as well. And what about that Basil? I mean, he does it all, doesn't he? Man, yeah, thank you, Basil. This really is a beautiful sight behind me, the cross that has been transformed. A cross, a symbol of death and punishment, has been transformed into a symbol of life. That's a beautiful thing. And that's really what Easter is all about. It's about resurrection. It's about life. It's about turning all of our despair into delight, our pain into peace. And Jesus Christ has done so much for us. And today we celebrate. We celebrate that Christ is risen. Even though Christ is risen, we know that we still live in a world where there's burdens and there's difficulties, there's struggles, there's unanswered questions. And so one of the purposes of the church is that we gather together and we help each other through those difficulties. So if you're struggling right now, we want to be there for you. One way that we do that is we'll have a couple of our elders out in the hallway and their wives to be there. If you need prayer, then you can be dismissed during the sermon time. I've been eyeing this Easter bunny up here on the pulpit here since the 8 a.m. Service. Didn't know exactly who it was for, but no one has claimed it. But just as all the cross movement was taking place, it says on the bottom, "For Todd." So keep your hands off of this. I'm grateful for Easter. Easter Sunday is the conclusion of what we often call Holy Week, which begins on Palm Sunday and then ends on Easter Sunday. And that week, I don't know if there was ever a week in Jerusalem quite like that week between Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday. It's nothing short of amazing. It's confusing. It's astonishing. It's filled with plot twists. And so I want us to kind of walk through that, but especially I want us to look at an event that takes place in Luke chapter 24, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But this was just an amazing week. When you look at this week and compare it to the totality of Jesus' life, which we estimate around 33 years, this one week in Jesus' life actually represents just 0.1% of those 33 years. But when you read the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the four accounts of Jesus' life and his ministry, that week, that holy week, accounts for at least 30%, and in some Gospels, 40% of the content. So it is a big week. It is a holy week, but it is a hectic week as well. So I want to walk you through how Luke, one of the gospel writers, describes some of the events of this week. It starts in chapter 19, and it starts with Palm Sunday. Jesus enters into Jerusalem. It's the annual celebration of the Passover, and this was a big holiday for the Jewish people, still is a huge holiday for the Jewish people, as it commemorated when Moses led the people out of Egypt and under the oppressive hand of the Pharaoh of Egypt. And so Passover was just an exciting time. It remembered when God delivered and also looked forward to a time when God would deliver again, because Moses himself said, there's going to be a prophet after me, greater than I am. And so for years and years, decades, centuries, the Jewish people have been looking forward to this Messiah, to this deliverer. And so Jesus had come along and he's been ministering publicly for about 3 years, and he's developed this reputation that maybe he is this prophet that Moses talked about. I mean, he's been teaching like no one else teaches. He's been working miracles. He's been gathering crowds together. And so on this Passover Sunday, this Passover week on Palm Sunday, I'm sure that the Jewish people were wondering whether or not this Jesus, this prophet, was the Messiah, and whether or not he would finally deliver the people of Israel from the oppressive hand of the Roman Empire. And so the crowd just goes wild as Jesus comes in. And we had that demonstrated here this morning with the kids waving their palm branches. Hundreds, maybe even thousands of people had gathered to welcome Jesus in to the city. And to make it even more dramatic, to fulfill prophecy, Jesus rides into Jerusalem on a donkey. I mean, what an entrance that Jesus makes. And that's how holy, hectic week begins. But while everyone is celebrating, shortly after that, Jesus seems to be very melancholy. He almost seems depressed. He's weeping. And instead of predicting the deliverance of Jerusalem, he's predicting the destruction of Jerusalem. Look what Luke says in chapter 19, verses 41 through 44. As he, Jesus, approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it. And he said, "If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes." See, they don't really understand the true peace that Jesus wants to bring. And then in verse 43, he starts using military language. He says, "The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you." This is how armies invaded other cities in the first century. "They will hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and your children within your walls. They will not leave one stone upon another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you." I don't think this was the speech that they were expecting. Shortly after that, Jesus goes into the temple, and his frustration, his depression turns to anger. He goes into the temple, and during the Passover week, it was very, very busy. Jews from all over the Roman Empire had gathered for that special celebration. But there was also a lot of commerce apparently taking place within the temple courts as well. You see, people that had traveled a long way, you were always expected to bring a sacrifice, and not everyone could carry that sacrifice along with them. And so there were vendors set up to sell these sacrificial animals to these people that have traveled a long distance. And as I've read, there may have been some of these vendors who were upcharging a little bit, knowing that they could charge anything that they want. And so a real holy experience had become an experience where people were actually trying to make some money. And so look at Luke chapter 19, 45 through 46. As Jesus enters the temple courts, he starts driving out those who are selling. And then he quotes from the Old Testament. He says, "It is written, 'My house will be a house of prayer, but you have made it into a den of robbers.'" Jesus is frustrated. Jesus is angry. Jesus doesn't realize how these people can overlook the special nature of this occasion. And then rumors start spreading around Jerusalem. They've already started spreading, but they seem to get even more and more believable. Seems like the Jewish leaders are looking for a way to kill Jesus. They're tired of him. They're tired of all this talk. Apparently, they're jealous of him as well. And so they want to arrest him. And ultimately, they want to kill him, but they can't do it in public. I mean, this guy is so popular, they just can't go up and arrest him. There would be a mob that would try to defend Jesus. And so they try to trick him. And during these times when he's teaching in the temple courts, they plant some people to ask Jesus some questions to try to catch him in some type of contradiction, or maybe for him to utter some blasphemous statement. And so in this holy, hectic week, we see these people coming to Jesus, but Jesus is always able to answer these questions so deftly that they say, "We can't trick this guy." And so they just give up. So this goes on day after day. Luke has a summary statement in chapter 21, 37 to 38, to describe Jesus' habits during this holy, hectic week. Each day, Jesus was teaching at the temple, and then each evening, he went out to spend the night on the hill called the Mount of Olives. There was a little hill just east of Jerusalem. It was a good walk, but it was within walking distance, and this seemed to be a favorite place for Jesus to retreat at night. And there was a special place about halfway up that hill called the Garden of Gethsemane that Jesus especially felt close to God. This is where Jesus is going to offer that impassioned prayer during this week. And then the next morning when Jesus came back down to the temple, the crowds would gather around and he'd do some more teaching. So it would be teach, Mount of Olives, sleep, repeat. Teach, Mount of Olives, sleep, repeat. Well, his opponents are getting nowhere. But then they catch a break. One of Jesus' apostles, one of the 12 men that have been with Jesus these 3 years during this public ministry, Judas, he approaches the Jewish rulers and he says, I think we can make a deal. I know his habits, and I can get you to a place where Jesus is away from the crowds, where you can arrest him. I can make this happen, of course, for a little sum of money. And so Judas makes this arrangement with the Jewish rulers. And that's what he does. As Jesus is up on the Mount of Olives one night, the night before his death, Judas seizes the opportunity. He leads the Jewish rulers to Jesus, and he identifies him with a kiss. Jesus is betrayed by Judas by a kiss. And then everything just kind of spins out of control. Jesus is arrested. He's taken before Herod, the king of the Jews, and even before Pilate, who is the Roman governor. And this is important because only the Roman government has the authority to execute someone, to bring about the punishment of capital punishment. And so again, everything happens so quickly, and before you know it, a crowd has gathered outside Pilate's residence as he is questioning Jesus, and they're crying out, crucify him, crucify him. And that's what they do. They strap a cross on Jesus' back. They make him carry it to a hill outside of Jerusalem, a hill that's called Golgotha or Calvary. Both of those words mean place of the skull. And it's on that hill that they crucify Jesus. He dies, and before the sun sets on Friday, he is buried in a tomb. I mean, what a week! It is a holy, hectic week. And so Luke is going to continue the story, of course, and we know the story. But he's going to continue the story and include an account that none of the other gospel writers include. He focuses on two of the people who were witnesses to that holy week. Of all the thousands of people that were gathered there, he focuses on these two people who had apparently observed all of this. That's the assumption that I'm operating under, that they were there on Palm Sunday. They were in the temples. They knew everything that was taking place. He identifies one of the people, his name Cleopas, and the other one is not named. We don't know why. Some think that the unnamed man is Luke himself. Interesting theory, but who really knows? Two guys going back to Emmaus. It's about a 7-mile walk from Jerusalem. And as they journey, they're processing everything that has taken place during that week. And so can you imagine that conversation? You know, man, that was one crazy week, wasn't it? Can you believe what has happened? Well, I really had my hopes up, but it doesn't seem to have worked out. And can you believe Judas? I never saw that coming, that Judas would betray him, that he would turn him in. And what do you think he meant when he said one stone will not remain on top of the other? I mean, what's going on? The week started out so exciting, but man, it took a turn for the worse. And so as they're talking about that week, out of nowhere, they're joined by another man. He's the resurrected Jesus, but for some reason, they can't recognize him. In fact, Luke says their eyes were closed. I don't know why. I don't know why they don't or why they can't. But then the stranger, as he joins these two people, these two men, he asks, hey, what are you guys talking about? And they say, where have you been? You know, have you just crawled out from under a stone? Weren't you in Jerusalem? Everyone is talking about this. Are you the only one who hasn't heard the news? And so they go on to tell the stranger that they thought that this was the man who was going to redeem Israel, but it didn't work out. They killed him. He's dead. It's been 3 days. No sign of him whatsoever. But they say, hey, we did hear a story. You know, the women who followed Jesus apparently this morning, they went to the tomb and it was empty and they saw some angels that said that he is alive. And I don't know why they decided to leave at that point, but apparently they must thought, it's just the women, you know? Just their imaginations are running away with them, but the tomb may have been empty, but no one has seen Jesus, so we just left town. We have just given up. The stranger sounds a little perturbed at this point in Luke 24, 25, and 26. So Jesus, and again, they still don't know it's Jesus, he says to these two guys, you are so thick-headed. You are so slow-hearted. Haven't you read the prophets? Didn't you know that all of this was supposed to happen? that the Messiah had to suffer, and then he would enter into his glory. And then the stranger gives them a summary of the Old Testament, essentially saying, it's all pointed to this week. And I'm not sure which passages in the Old Testament Jesus went to. Maybe Isaiah 53. But essentially he says, this is exactly how it was supposed to happen. Well, they finally get to Emmaus. It's getting late, and so they beg the stranger to stay. And he does, and they have a meal. And then the stranger, and this is a little odd, the stranger assumes the role of the host. Because he takes the bread, and he breaks it, and he blesses it. And there's something about that moment. There's something about having this meal with Jesus that suddenly their eyes are opened and they recognize that it's Jesus. And I don't know. Luke doesn't tell us what exactly happened at that point. Maybe it was just sitting around that table. A lot of very significant things happen when people have dinner with Jesus. And maybe they'd heard those stories. Or maybe they had just sat down and had really looked at Jesus and started to recognize him. I don't know. Maybe it was the language that Luke uses here, he also uses in a previous story in the Gospel of Luke when the crowds gathered together, the 5,000 men gathered together, and then Jesus took the five loaves and very similar terms. He blessed it and he broke it. And so maybe these two were part of that crowd of 5,000, and maybe that language kind of revived them and they recognized that it was Jesus. I don't know. Or some people have theorized that maybe when Jesus was handing out the bread, that they saw the holes in his hands that were left by the nails, those same holes that would later convince doubting Thomas that Jesus was alive. I don't know. But they recognize him, and as soon as they recognize him, he's gone. And I love what they say next in chapter 24, verse 32. Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures? And I kind of imagine that. The one guy saying, you know, I knew it was him. And the other guy says, you didn't know it was him. I knew it was him. No, I knew it. There was something about it, the way that he talked. I really suspected. And then maybe both of them said, I was hoping it was him, but I didn't want to say anything. I wanted to believe that it was him. After that revelation, the two go back to Jerusalem. I know it's night, but nothing's going to stop them from going back to Jerusalem. And they're going to meet up with the apostles, and they share with them, man, you can't believe the experience that we had on the way back to Emmaus. And while they are speaking, Jesus appears. And Jesus says, peace be with you. So a day that had begun with panic ends with peace. A day that began with death ends with life. And that's what the resurrection does. It brings us peace. It brings us life. And just like this cross, which was once a symbol of death, has become a symbol of life and hope and peace, that's what the resurrection does in our lives as well. As I said, Luke was the only one to include this story in his gospel. And I'm not sure why, but I think it's because Luke knows that all of us have walked that same road of doubt. All of us have had those same feelings that Cleopas and whoever the other person was had on that journey back to Emmaus. Haven't all of us in our spiritual walk have had feelings of panic and despair and dashed hopes? And we want to believe, but sometimes it's hard for us to believe. When we hear things, you know, we go to the doctor and the doctor says, I'm sorry, there's nothing more that we can do. We've done everything. Or the boss calls us into the office and he says, I'm sorry, we just have to make some cuts and we've got to let you go. Or maybe the girl or the guy that you've been dating, you thought that they were the one and they say, we have to have a talk. Or maybe you get that email or that letter in the mail from the college that you applied to, and it's not the news that you wanted. We've all been in those situations, haven't we? Because the world will always disappoint us. And we wonder, on our walk, we wonder, why hasn't God made everything right? Why are there still these doubts? And so Cleopas and his friend, he lived in between the Friday and the Sunday. And we don't live in between the Friday and Sunday because we know about the resurrection. But we live in between the time of the resurrection and that promise that Jesus said that he's going to come back. And he's going to make everything right. But in the meantime, we wonder, is it really going to happen? Is Jesus really going to make everything right? Is Jesus really going to reign? Are all my concerns, all my worries going to be taken care of? And so this story reminds us that Jesus is a Jesus who keeps his promise. And we can be sure that when Scripture says he will come back, we can bank on it. And one day everything will be fine. See, the resurrection of Jesus changes everything. Changed everything for those two men on their journey, and it changes everything for us. At times, there's nothing but despair and defeat. Sometimes our hopes are dashed, our dreams are shattered. But on Easter Sunday, despair was transformed into delight. And everything changed. Is empty. Jesus is risen, just like he said. On that Sunday, and on this Sunday, hope is alive, joy is revived, and peace is abundant, and the mercy of God is poured out for all of us. It was and continues to be the greatest moment in history. And today we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. Let's stand together and sing.
Salvation belongs to our God, who sits upon the throne. Forever and ever be our God, forever and ever. Be to our God, forever and ever. Amen. And we, the redeemed, shall be strong.